Chapter 26, Planet, 58. Kral Fisher had seen Igor Kurapatsky only twice in the 3 years since he had assumed the post formerly held by Taneyama and had become the actual, if not the titular, head of the project. He had no trouble recognizing him, however, when the photo entry had signaled his image. Kurapatsky was still his portly, outwardly genial self. He was dressed well with a large and fluffy cravat in the latest style. As for Fisher, he had been relaxing through the morning and was scarcely presentable, but one did not refuse to receive Kurapatsky, even when he came without warning. Fisher signaled the tactful hold image, the cartoon figure of a welcoming host or hostess, for the sex was made conventionally ambiguous, with a hand upraised delicately in a gesture that was universally understood to mean, "Just a minute," without the crassness of actually saying so. Fisher had a few moments to comb his hair and adjust his clothes. He might have shaved, but he felt that Kurapatsky would consider any further delay insulting. The door slid aside, and Kurapatsky walked in. He smiled pleasantly and said, "Good morning, Fisher. I intrude upon you, I know." "No intrusion, Director," said Fisher, making an effort to sound sincere. "But if you wish to see Dr. Wendell, she is, I'm afraid, at the ship." Kurapatsky grunted. "You know, I rather thought she might be. I have no choice, then, but to talk to you. May I sit down?" "Yes, of course, Director," said Fisher, chagrined at not having offered Kurapatsky a seat before the request was made. "Would you care for refreshment?" "No," Kurapatsky patted his abdomen. "I weigh myself every morning, and that alone is sufficient to cost me my appetite. Almost. Fisher, I have never had a chance to talk to you man to man. I have wanted to."
"It is my pleasure, Director," mumbled Fisher, beginning to grow uneasy. What was this all about?
"Our planet is in debt to you."
"If you say so, Director," said Fisher.
"You were on Rotor before it left."
"That was 14 years ago, Director."
"I know it was. You were married on Rotor and had a child."
"Yes, Director," said Fisher in a low voice.
"But you returned to Earth just before Rotor left the solar system."
"Yes, Director."
"It was from something that was said to you and that you repeated here, plus another suggestion you made that led to Earth's discovery of the neighbor star."
"Yes, Director."
"And it was you who brought Dr. Tessa Wendell from Adelia to Earth."
"Yes, Director."
"And you have made it possible for her to work here for over 8 years and kept her happy, eh?"
He chuckled deeply, and Fisher felt that had Kurapatsky been closer, he would have dug his elbow into Fisher's side in a man-to-man fashion. Fisher said cautiously, "We get along well, Director."
"But you have never married."
"I'm already married, Director."
"And separated 14 years. A divorce could be quickly arranged."
"I also have a daughter."
"Who would remain your daughter even if you married again?"
"It would be a meaningless formality, surely."
"Well, perhaps," Kurapatsky nodded, "and perhaps it even works better this way. You know, the superluminal ship is ready to move. We hope to launch it at the beginning of 2237.
"So I have been told by Dr. Wendell, Director."
"The neuronic detectors are installed and work well."
"I have been told that too, Director." Kurapatsky held one hand in the other in his lap and nodded his large head ponderously. Then he looked up quickly at Fisher and said,
"Do you know how it works?"
Fisher shook his head. "No, sir. I know nothing about the actual workings of the ship."
Kurapatsky nodded his head again. "Nor I. We have to accept the word of Dr. Wendell and our engineers. One thing is still lacking, though."
"Oh?" Cold anxiety swept over Fisher. "More delay? What is lacking, Director?"
"Communications. I would think that if there is a device that can make a ship move much faster than light, there should also be a device that would send waves or some other form of message-carrying device faster than light, too. It seems to me it would be easier to send a superluminal message than drive a superluminal ship."
"I can't say, Director."
"Yet Dr. Wendell assures me that the reverse is true, that, as yet, there is no method of efficient superluminal communication. Eventually there will be, she says, but not now. And she doesn't want to wait for such communication, which, she says, may take a long time."
"I don't want to wait either, Director."
"Yes, I'm anxious for progress and success. We've been waiting years already, and I am eager to see the ship leave and return. But it does mean that once the ship leaves, we will be out of contact."
He nodded thoughtfully, and Fisher maintained a discreet silence. What was all this about? What was the old bear getting at? Korapatsky looked up at Fisher. You know that the neighbor star is heading in our direction?
Yes, Director, I've heard of that, but it seems to be the common feeling that it will pass us at a great enough distance to leave us unaffected.
That's the feeling we want people to have. Now, the truth is, Fisher, that the neighbor star will pass closely enough to disturb Earth's orbital motion substantially.
Fisher paused for a moment in shock.
And destroy the planet? Not physically. The climate will be sufficiently changed, however, so that Earth will no longer be habitable.
Is that certain? Said Fisher, reluctant to believe it.
I don't know that scientists are ever really certain, but they seem sufficiently close to certain to make it necessary for us to begin to take measures. We have 5,000 years, and we are developing superluminal flight, assuming the ship works.
If Dr. Wendell says it will work, Director, I'm convinced it will.
Let's hope your confidence is not misplaced. Nevertheless, even 5,000 years with superluminal flight leaves us in a bad spot. We would have to build 130,000 settlements like Rotor to carry off Earth's 8 billion people, plus enough plants and animals to set up viable worlds. That's 26 Noah's Arks a year starting right now. That's assuming there's no increase in population over the next 5,000 years.
Perhaps, said Fisher cautiously, we can handle an average of 26 a year. Our experience and expertise should increase with the centuries, and our population control has worked for decades.
Very well. Now tell me this. If we do lift Earth's population into space in 130,000 settlements, making use of Earth's full resources, plus those of the Moon, Mars, and the asteroids, and abandon the solar system to the gravitational mercies of the neighbor star, where do all these settlements go?
I don't know, Director, said Fisher.
We will have to find planets sufficiently Earth-like to accept our vast population without prohibitive requirements for terraforming. We must think of that, too, and we must think of it now, not 5,000 years from now.
Even if we don't find suitable planets, we can put the settlements into orbit about suitable stars.
Inevitably, Fisher made circular movements with his finger. My dear man, that wouldn't work.
With all respect, Director, it does work right here in the solar system.
Not at all. There's a planet here in the solar system that even today, despite all the settlements, contains 99% of the human species. We are still humanity, and the settlements are just a kind of fluff that surrounds us. Could the fluff exist by itself? We have no proof that they can, and I think not.
You may be right, Director, said Fisher.
Maybe. There's no doubt about it, said Korapatsky heatedly. The settlers affect to despise us, but we fill their thoughts. We're their history. We're their model. We're the teeming source to which they return again and again for reinvigoration. Left to themselves, they would wither.
You may be right, Director, but the experiment has never been tried. We have never had a situation in which settlements tried to exist without a planet.
But we have had such a situation, at least in analogy. In Earth's early history, human beings settled islands and were isolated from the mainstream. The Irish settled Iceland. The Norse settled Greenland. The mutineers settled Pitcairn Island. The Polynesians settled Easter Island. Result? The colonists withered, sometimes disappeared entirely. Always stagnation. No civilization ever developed except in a continental area or in islands in close proximity to a continental area. Humanity needs space, size, variety, a horizon, a frontier, you see?
Fisher said, yes, Director. Past a certain point, why argue?
So that,
and Korapatsky put his right forefinger on his left palm didactically,
we must find a planet, at least one planet, to begin with. Which brings us to Rotor.
Fisher raised his eyebrows in surprise.
To Rotor, Director? Yes. In the 14 years since they've left, what's happened to them?
Dr. Wendell is of the opinion that they may not have survived. He felt a pang saying it. He always felt a pang when he thought about it.
I know she does. I've talked to her, and I've accepted what she has said without discussion, but I'd like your opinion.
I don't have one, Director. I have only the earnest hope that they have survived. I have a daughter on Rotor.
Perhaps you still have. Think, What was there to have destroyed them? A malfunctioning part. Rotor is not a ship, but a settlement that for 50 years had had no serious malfunction. It traveled through empty space between here and the neighbor star, and what can be more harmless than empty space? A mini black hole? An undetected asteroidal body? What evidence? Those are just guesses and of almost zero probability, the astronomers tell me. Is it something about the inherent properties of hyperspace that may have destroyed Rotor? We've been experimenting with hyperspace for years now, and there is nothing inherently dangerous in it that we can find. So we can suppose that Rotor reached the neighbor star safely, if that's where they went, and all seem to agree that it makes no sense to suppose they went anywhere else. I would like to think that they arrived safely, but then the question arises, if Rotor is safe at the neighbor star, what is it doing there? Existing. It was halfway between a statement and a question. But how? Circling the neighbor star, a single settlement on an endless, lonely journey about a red dwarf star? I don't think so. They would wither, and it would not take them long to realize that. I am sure they would wither fast.
And die? Is that your conclusion, Director?
No. They would give up and come home. They would acknowledge defeat and come back to safety. However, they have not done so, and do you know what I've been thinking? I've been thinking they've found a habitable planet at the neighbor star.
But there can't be a habitable planet circling a red dwarf star, Director. There's a shortage of energy, unless you get so close that there's too much tidal effect. He paused and muttered, shamefaced. Dr. Wendell explained that to me.
Yes, astronomers have explained it to me, too, but... He shook his head. Experience has taught me that no matter how sure scientists think they are, nature has a way of surprising them. Anyway, do you understand why we are letting you go on this voyage?
Yes, Director. Your predecessor promised I would go in return for services rendered.
I have a better reason than that. My predecessor, who was a great man, an admirable man, was also a sick old man at the end. His enemies thought that he had become paranoid. He believed Rotor knew of Earth's danger and had left without warning us because they wanted Earth destroyed, and that Rotor must therefore be punished. However, he is gone, and I am here. I am not old or sick or paranoid. Assuming Rotor is safe and is at the neighbor star, it is not our intention to harm them.
I'm glad of that. But isn't this something you ought to discuss with Dr. Wendell, Director? She is to be the captain of the ship.
Dr. Wendell is a settler. You are a loyal Earthman.
Dr. Wendell has worked loyally for years on the superluminal project.
That she has been loyal to the project is beyond question. But is she loyal to Earth? Can we count on her to carry out the letter and the spirit of Earth's intentions toward Rotor?
May I ask, Director, just what Earth's intentions are toward Rotor? I take it that there is no longer the intention of punishing the settlement for its failure to warn us.
That is correct. What we want now is association, human brotherhood, only the kindliest of feelings. With friendship established, there must be a quick return with as much information as possible about Rotor and its planet.
Surely, if Dr. Wendell is told this, if she has this explained to her, she will carry it out.
Korapatsky chuckled. One would think so, but you know how it is. She is a woman who is not in the first bloom of youth. A fine woman, I have no fault to find, but she is in her 50s.
What of that? Fisher found himself offended.
She must know that when she comes back, with the vital experience of a successful superluminal flight, she will be more valuable to us than ever. That she will be needed to design newer, better, more advanced superluminal vessels. That she will have to train young people as superluminal pilots. She will be quite sure that she will never be allowed to venture out through hyperspace again, for she will simply be too valuable to risk. Therefore, before coming back, she may be tempted to explore further. She may not wish to abandon the thrill of seeing new stars and penetrating new horizons. But we cannot have her take one risk more than she must take to reach Rotor, gain the information, and return. We cannot afford the time lost, either. Do you understand?
His voice had become hard. Fisher swallowed. Surely you have no real reason.
I have every reason. Dr. Wendell has always been in a delicate position here, as a settler. You understand, I hope. Of all the people on Earth, she is the one we depend on most, and she is a settler. She has had to be the subject of a detailed psychological profile. She has been extensively studied with and without her knowledge, and we are quite certain that given the chance, she will go off exploring. And she will be out of communication with us. We won't know where she is, what she is doing. We won't even know if she is alive.
And why are you telling me all this, Director?
Because we know you have great influence over her. She can be guided by you if you are firm.
I think, perhaps, you overestimate my influence, Director.
I am sure we don't. You, too, have been much studied, and we know exactly how bound the good doctor is to you, perhaps more than you yourself realize. We know also that you are a loyal son of Earth. You might have left with Rotor, stayed with your wife and daughter, but you returned to Earth at the cost of losing them. You did that, moreover, knowing that my predecessor, Director Taniyama, would consider you a failure for failing to bring information back concerning hyper-assistance, and that your career might well be ruined. That satisfies me that I can count on you to see to it that Dr. Wendell is kept under firm control and is brought back to us quickly, and that you will this time, bring back the information we need.
I'll try, Director, said Fisher.
You say that dubiously, said Kuropatsky. Please understand the importance of what I am asking you to do. We must know just what they're doing, how strong they are, and what the planet is like. Once we know all that, we will know what we must do and how strong we must be and for what kind of life we must be prepared. Because, Fisher, we must have a planet, and we must have it now. And we have no choice but to take Rotor's planet.
If it exists, said Fisher hoarsely.
It had better exist, said Kuropatsky. Earth's survival depends upon it.